Mulligan, everybody. This is Harry Carey. And there's nothing I love more here in the summertime than Cubs baseball, a little Bricks Behind the Ivy podcast, and a little, nice cold zesty beverage. So here we are. Stay tuned. Buckle up. Let's listen to the boys. So long, everybody.
Hey, hey, Cub fans. Welcome to another episode of Bricks Behind the Ivy. I am Jeff Rogowskis, your host, a.k.a. Candid Cubs. With me, as always, is co-host extraordinaire, Sean Hot Stove Cubbies Japin. Sean, how are you doing today?
What's up, brother? Special teams, special players, special plays. Yeah, that's a thing kids are doing now, apparently. It's sketch. Sketch of social media. So I just thought I would appeal to the younger audience, I guess. But I am doing great after a wonderful West Coast trip the Cubs had. So yeah, I'm impressed with our Cubbies.
Yeah, I think it was some late nights last 2 weeks as I tried to stay up and watch as much of the games as possible. Spoiler alert, I watched all the games because I am insane. But yeah, same. Just the West Coast tilt is such an awesome time for dads or parents, in which usually the kids are asleep by the time first pitch and you can see the whole game, where that 7 o'clock start isn't necessarily the best for those with children because that's usually right in the middle of bedtime. So yeah, kind of got to get creative with ear pods, and you don't want your kid to feel neglected. You know, I'm like, I feel like I'm a pretty solid dad, so I try really hard not to ignore them, but there's a lot of the game going on. So I do like the West Coast trip, but it is definitely tough on my coffee budget. But yeah, ultimately a pretty successful trip. They ended up being above 500, which is really all I was looking for. How about you, Sean? What were your expectations going west?
I really expected them to actually be a little below 500. I'll get into it a little bit later, because West Coast has never treated the Cubs well. It seems like every time they hit out west, they're below 500. I don't know if there's any stats to back that up, but yeah, West Coast and Cubs never go well together.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's a tough trip on the body with the time changes. The Cubs kind of ended that one game pretty late on Sunday with the rain delay and Shota getting kind of cut short in that start. So then they headed out west, you know, a little bit later than you'd like. And then that kind of carries over to every game. There was a day off there, obviously, when we recorded last week. But yeah, it's a grind. I mean, they were San Diego, and then they go all the way up north to Seattle and then back down to Arizona. And no off day. They play tonight. And then
extra innings on top of that in Arizona. Exactly. I mean, that's tough on the players and tough on sleep. You know, we complain about our sleep, but we got to think about those players. My gosh. And then the taxed bullpen, guys throwing innings like crazy. So I bet the boys are glad to be back at home and taking on the Marlins.
Yeah, hopefully the friendly confines prove to be very friendly, and hopefully the weather holds up. But True. It is time for Sean's favorite segment and other people's maybe favorite segment, the Box Score Blitz.
Box Score Blitz.
There's a man in the corner. Shameless plug of Wayne's World. That's one of my favorite movies of all time, and I just watched that again with the wife this weekend. We saw it on Amazon Prime. No free ads. And it had been a while since we've seen it. And that movie makes me laugh really, really hard every time I see it. And it's a certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. It's always fun to kind of look back in hindsight movies you really loved and see how they're rated. And I actually was a little surprised by that just because Saturday Night Live movies haven't necessarily been super received well. Some of them are pretty bad. But yeah, that one's certified fresh. So check it out.
So not the Ladies Man?
Ooh, it's a lady. I'm a big Saturday Night Live guy. All right, so let's do the Box Score Blitz. The purpose of this is to try to get through a summary of what's happened since we've last recorded as quick as possible. No time on the clock, but we will see how we do. Game one, Cubs versus Mariners. Jordan Wicks versus Bobby Miller. Wicks was on a short burn. Get it? He's kind of like a candle. Wicks only lasted 4 innings. Walked, got into some trouble. 4 innings, 6 hits, 4 walks, 6 strikeouts. However, he did lead pitchers with 16 whiffs in that game, so the stuff is still playing high. Offense was not a tree, but it actually was a bush. Crushed home run. His second home run in two games were at that point. This one was 105 at 406 feet. The Mariners, however, are 5-0. When they get a quality start, they got a quality start. Cubs drop the opener. Game two versus the Mariners. Imanaga versus Emerson Hancock. Early in the game, they scored a run on a miscatch by Bush, which is going to happen. He's not perfect. I love him so much, but he's not perfect. So give me a break, okay? Imanaga still at zero earned runs, 15.1 innings pitched, 16 strikeouts in that time, 0.72 whip. He was good again. He qualified for the win, putting up 5.1. This was all about the bomb squad. Three solo home runs. Say you later, Tater. Say a home run. Am I seeing this right? Amaya had a home run, and the third straight game was a dong for my Bush Bay. Cubs win 4-1, and there's another save for the People's Fist, Edward Alzolay. Game three, the rubber match, seeing who's going to win this series. Cubs score quickly in the first on a single by Cody Bellinger. However, the wedding is just getting bigger and bigger because Bush bombs keep getting longer and longer. This is a math pod. He hit this one 437 at 108 miles per hour. That's my boy. Javier, the ass man, Assad, gets cheeky. 5.2, 6 Ks. They tried to push his pitch count, his highest pitch count of his career. Gave up a two-run bomb to Jorge Polanco. I think they were trying to avoid the bullpen, but unfortunately they had to bring them in, and the rest of this game was stressful. I have no nails left. Almonte lights out Leiter, Neris, and Adbert shut the door. Neris walked three and somehow got out of that inning. Cubs win 3-2, take the series. Uh-oh, pause. They ended up getting a right oblique injury. He's been added to the 10-day injured list. We'll see how long that holds him out. It is not the same oblique as it was last year. Last year was the left that sidelined him as he was ramping up. So hopefully, since he's already ramped up, this won't be the same type of injury. Injury stacking up. Injured list for Merriweather, who's been put on the 60-day DL. Steele and Tyone, obviously, we're still injured. Tyone's coming back tonight, so that's good news, but waiting on Steele, so hopefully they will continue to get healthier. Game one versus the Slippery Snakes, the team that took out the Cubs last year. They went 1-6 versus this team down the stretch. Pause. This is why the Cubs didn't make the playoffs last year, not because of games they lost in April, which I understand would have helped, but going 1-6 versus a team that's right behind you in the wild card at that point is not going to help things. Unpause. Bush.
Exactly. Thank you.
Bush, five games in a row. No one has ever had six games in a row with a home run, but my boy, he's got five. Ben Brown, what can Brown do for you? He can shove. Six innings pitch, one and run, two walks, four Ks. Hey, Keegan Thompson is back. That's a name that we all remember going into 2023. We had all written him down as the savior for the bullpen. Turns out he wasn't. But tonight he's the hero. The Cubs scored late in this one on a wild pitch in the ninth to get the game to extras. Keegan Thompson put in two innings pitch. Nico Wico hit an RBI single in the 11th. Cubs win 3-2, two inning save for Mr. Keegan Thompson. He looked good out there. Game two, no coffee needed for me late night, but I'm fueled by wins. Hendricks gets shelled. I know I'm going to keep getting ripped on the internet for supporting this man. 4.1 innings, 7 runs, 7 earned runs, 2 home runs, 3 walks, 3 Ks. Not the best. Little Puencia and them came in, did not stop the fire. Leiter and Almonte got some holes, and then comeback. Cubs were down 4-1, then they were up 5-4, and then they went down 8-5. Then they had a 6-run 7th with an Ian Happ-Daddy grand slammy. 2 outs, up 11-10 in the bottom of the ninth. Alzolay slider gets smoked, and what looked like wasn't going to be a home run, but ended up being a home run to Ketel Marte Parte. Helps lose this game late in the 11, 12-11. Game three, woke up on that day very tired, very cranky, because I had no fuels from my wins. Afternoon game after a long night game, bullpen is taxed, and it is April, so it's tax season. Marte started this game with a home run, and I officially declared Marte Parte's forever are canceled. But there were two more in the fifth on a litany of hits for the Cubs. They took the lead, but they immediately gave up runs. Wicks was pretty solid in this one, still not getting length. 4.1, 5 hits, 2 walks, 5 Ks. But Fott had some fat pitches, and there was another belly home run and a Tauchman double. And they multiplied the lead for Mantiply. Multiply, Mantiply, get it? And Wesnanski comes in and takes the last four innings of this game, besides the last few outs by Drew Smiley. He was Wesnasty. Four innings pitched, one hit, very low contact rate. 2 Ks. The Cubs win this one. They go 5-4 on the West Coast trip, and that is the box score blitz.
Hooray! Just a side note, I have no idea what he's going to say on the box score blitz whatsoever, folks.
Me
and
either.
So I'm as entertained as all of you probably are. So just keep it coming. Love it, man. Love it.
You can call me out on it, but generally I have notes from the box score. The jokes are on the fly, and we just improvise. See how I'm feeling. Whatever reference of my life I try to throw into the box score blitz, but... Yeah, thank you.
What can Brown do for you? That one got me. Oh, so good.
So with that trip being done, the Cubs being over 500, surviving a pretty tough stretch. They've had, you know, a lot of top-end talent, top-end opponents, or expected top-end opponents to start the year.
Yep.
Where are they at standings-wise?
Well, right now, the Cubs are in second place. They got the sixth best record in baseball at the time of recording this. And their run differential is plus 15. Now, what surprises me the most is how cooled off the Pirates got. I mean, just looking at the box score, seeing them lose three in a row, they're 4-6 in their last 10. So the Cubs have really taken advantage, and this is a tough stretch. So, I mean, coming in at 11-7 is impressive to me at this point. A couple other things I wanted to call out with looking at the standings, the Kansas City Royals, who I picked to win the Central, are 12-6, and they have a plus 41 run differential. Plus 41. That's insane at this early in the year.
Old friend Nelson Velasquez has been hitting some ding-dongs over there for them. And Bobby Wood Jr., just legit a fun player to watch.
Oh, so much fun.
Looking for ball players to watch that aren't on the beloved Cubbies, check this guy out. He is a star. He got that extension that I think we've mentioned a few times on this pod. Fast, good defender, solid defender, not an amazing defender, solid defender, really good bat.
He'll get better.
Still very young. Still just a bunch of fun. There's a lot of young talent in this game right now that's fun to watch.
Yeah, it feels like baseball's really taking a turn with their young talent and seeing these young superstars on the rise. Obviously, Acuña, I can never say his name, Ronald. Acuña. Let's just call him Ronald.
Acuña Matata.
There you go. There, I can remember that. And of course, you're Michael Bush. You don't like your Bush heavy or light. You like it, Michael. Love him, Michael. So seeing all these young players come up is really exciting. One of the other things I wanted to call out, the Houston Astros, who the Cubs are going to be facing in the next series, spoiler alert for what we're going to be discussing here in a little bit, they're 6-14. Yikes. The Houston Astros are 6-14. I am surprised by that. Just shocking to me. Now, of course, it's early in the season. They're probably going to end up turning it around because they have that voodoo magic. But it's still amazing to me that that team with how much talent's on there is 6-14.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this isn't an Astros pod. This is a Cubs pod. But the pitching has been really bad. I mean, considering they're the second worst team ERA to the Rockies, that's not a group you want to be associated with.
No.
And this is a team that, you know, made some moves in the bullpen. They went and got Josh Hader, and they had a pretty solid bullpen before. But, yeah, I think the rotation has not come out looking like they'd want it. Hunter Brown had a nice rebound start the other night. The only reason I'm tracking Hunter Brown is, hey, I love baseball. I watch a lot of baseball, and he's also on my fantasy team. So when that guy got shelled, I'd, you know, put some low dollars in my budget to bring him back and thought that he had a very similar delivery and demeanor as Verlander, which a lot of analytic videos had pointed out, but he has just been not great. And, you know, it's obviously small sample size alert very early in the season, but, you know, you get a few starts in and you're getting lit up, and he's supposed to be a big part of that rotation. But Verlander is getting healthy for them. That offense will probably get a little bit better. They've got some really big players in there with Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez, but ultimately, just a surprising start. And it's a weird hole. 8 games under already. Like, it's not impossible because of the amount of time, but that's a lot of games in April.
It is.
That's very shocking.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you had a topic you wanted to hit on over the past week. So I want to kick it over to you and find out what that is.
Sure, real quick, I just kind of want to update the NL Central standings. I don't know if you ready and willing, or if that.
Yeah, I can take that. Okay. So we have the Brewers at 11-6 in first place. I'm surprised by that. I picked the under, and now I'm feeling really stupid. I know it's early, but still. Cubs are 11-7. Pittsburgh Pirates, who have lost three in a row, are 11-8. The Reds are 500 at 99, and St. Louis bringing up the rear. Just love that. Love that. They're 9-10. Again, the Central is looking pretty strong early on. And I mean, when the worst team in the division is only one game under 500, I think all the teams have hit the ground running there.
Yeah, I think there's obviously some quality of opponent things that we need to figure out and, you know, look into as the year goes on. But yeah, I think this division is as tight as we expected. And yeah, given the Cubs' tough stretch, it's been super nice to just see them kind of chug along, not too hot, not too cold, just continuing to win ball games. Yeah, there's been a frustrating few games here, but every season because of it being a marathon has those. But 11-7 is a really good spot, having survived that gauntlet of the West Coast trip. And you get to come home and, you know, hopefully get some home cooking before there's another stretch that kind of is pretty tough. The Cubs have a pretty tough start to the year, and then it tapers off at the second half of the year, which, yeah, you want to kind of get your bearings when it's tough. And then when it gets warmer at Wrigley and this team is, you know, kind of in there in the race, things are going to get fun. It's going to be a fun summer.
Yep, pedal to the metal. That later part of the year, hopefully they make some additions at the trade deadline. I know that's really looking for far ahead, but I mean, they're starting off right. I love 11-7.
So as you mentioned, I do want to bring one thing up, and I've been all over Twitter about this, and different people have commented at me, and I just wanted to kind of talk a little bit longer form, not long form. I'm not going to bore you to death, but Kyle Hendricks, I think we've talked about on this pod in different capacities, and I've talked about on some of my MLB The Show Sunday streams. If you haven't checked those out, check those out. How much Kyle Hendricks means to me specifically, and how I can understand that can give me a pretty significant blind spot. I'm sure he is in the same vein for maybe a number of Cub fans. I mean, he's the last player on this team from the 16 team. Right off the bat, that is such a attachment that I feel like any Cub fan's going to have. That 16 team was so special. Obviously, true, they did the thing that we never thought would happened. And he started two pivotal games in that stretch. He started game 6 in the LCS. He started game 7 of the World Series, and he was pulled too soon. Anyway, he has had a rough start results-wise to the year. The earned run average is in the mid-12s. I had it in front of me a second ago, but high. His earned run average is really, really high, and it's just not a good situation. 12-7-1. And I've seen some tweets and such about his slow starts in the past. And yeah, I've really tried to dig into the data, and I know not all folks have agreed necessarily with what the data is showing, but I think there is some things that give me some hope, and maybe I'm off base here, and feel free to tweet at me or message me if you think I'm wrong, or happy to have these conversations. But no, his exit velocity on balls hit is still pretty solid. He is still in the 81th percentile in his average exit velocity, which is kind of what you want to see from Kyle.
Sure.
I, you know, have read some things about like how that distribution is. There's just more contact. There's more contact from hitters, so that exit velocity is kind of going down, because with strikeouts and walks and whiffs being down below career norms, and now that ball's going in play, it doesn't matter how soft it's hit. If you're managing contact, but you're giving up a ton of contact, we kind of talked about this at one point, that BAPIP, batting average on balls in play, like once the ball's in play, anything can happen. There's no control for the pitcher of what happens once the ball's in play. And the Cubs have, you know, a very solid infield defense and a pretty solid outfield defense, give or take, depending on who is out there. But you never know what's going to happen. So the ideal situation from a pitching perspective is to strike someone out. And Kyle Hendricks has done that enough and then has used contact management to be a pretty successful pitcher in the major leagues. More successful than I think a lot of people would have expected, given the mix of his repertoire and the velocity. But, you know, things that are sticking out to me that I think are kind of unusual, and I think there's been some discussion with some folks I've seen on the internet and some folks and that are much smarter than me in the baseball world as I try to navigate my place in baseball analytics. But
right,
his velocity is up and his horizontal movement is up, and not like a little bit. Like, his velocity is up like 1.2 miles per hour, depending on the pitch, on several of his pitches. The curveball was in the last start, and we're starting to see more vertical
several times.
Yeah, the vertical movement.
He listens to this podcast.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. Hey, Kyle, if you're listening, I love you. I mean,
yeah,
we both. Michael, you were my first love. Michael Bush, I do love you, but Kyle Hendricks is my first love. My son's named after Kyle Hendricks, so
I haven't
told that story, but that's for another pod. But Kyle Hendricks, you know, his batted ball profile isn't great. It's not like we're not gonna, you know, put lipstick on a pig. It's not great, but yeah. The horizontal movement thing to me is very interesting with the velocity, because I would say that I would look to the velocity and the movement as concern of the health of the shoulder, and I think with movement and velocity being up, I don't think that's showing tiring. If anything, I feel like it's showing some strength. It's showing, you know, that there's a little more movement, a little more oomph than maybe he's even used to, because some of these are actually approaching career highs, not just on horizontal movement. So,
yeah,
which I think can explain to some of the stuff leaking into the zone. He's getting a little more bite, and so he's fighting his mechanics. So getting less bite to get it where he thinks he's going to go, or adjusting to whatever bite he has, is what's really going to be the difference for him in success-wise. If these pitches, based on their movement and their spin and their horizontal movement, are leaking into the zone, we all know he doesn't have the velocity and the elite spin rate and stuff to manage contact. That's just not what he is. And he has to get those edges early in the game and then expand the zone with the changeup. It's what he always has been. And then he uses, you know, high inside fastballs from time to time to change the eye level. Once that's been expanded, then he uses the curveball to kind of throw in oh my God, he's got another pitch I need to think about. So
yeah, exactly.
Tommy Hotovy was on the Score the other day, giving a vote of confidence for Kyle Hendricks. And before the start, Jed Hoyer had kind of alluded to, well, he's got 29 more of these potentially to figure it out. So there seems to be at least some sort of support from the front office. I think that
there should be a long leash on him. There should absolutely be a long leash on him, and he gets it figured out. That's the thing that I don't think a lot of fans are giving some thought to, is he starts off like this a lot, and just the eye test, him throw, you know, a couple of those pitches were not even competitive pitches. And I think that's where he was getting into some trouble. And I just think he's fighting his mechanics. He's aiming a little too much because he's trying to be fine, because he's got a lot of runners on base and he knows he's not a strikeout pitcher, but I they're going to give him that long leash. I totally believe that. So go on, Jeff. Sorry about that.
No, no problem. I think that's a fair point. I think like we need to kind of peel back the onion per se and try to understand like why people are overreacting. And it really has to do with when he's pitched, the games have not been very competitive.
Yep.
We've left some, you know, some wins on the table in that perspective. And there's just this hypersensitivity of how the Cubs missed the playoffs last year, this roster being very similar, and concern of losing these games early and not pulling the trigger. I feel like there's an association to the Eric Hosmer experience, like the Trey Mancini experience. And there just seemed to be
that way.
Correct. Yeah. I don't think that's apples and oranges in my opinion. It's not the same situation, but I do understand. I can be empathetic of this being a very challenging situation when things aren't going well, but you know, I'm going to give him more run. You can call me crazy. Go ahead. Call me crazy.
You're crazy. You're absolutely nuts.
I'm not crazy, but my mom had me tested, but ultimately, yeah, I think there just needs to be a little more runway here. And I'm going to keep looking under the hood and you can join me. There's a lot of good pitching data on Baseball Savant. There's a lot of good baseball data out there if you're looking for it. Baseball Reference obviously has a bunch of stuff for stats, and I can't think of the baseball stats site I use the most. God, it's well, it doesn't matter. But ultimately, yeah, just look into the stuff under the hood if you're interested and see how it compares to previous years. And yeah, I think I'm going to continue to kind of be on the Kyle Hendricks train. And I do realize that at some point, and Patrick Mooney wrote an excellent article in The Athletic today about this specific topic that is behind a paywall. I'm not going to get into it. Read Patrick's stuff. Super good stuff. Love reading Patrick Mooney. Sahadev Sharma to all the guys over there who cover the Cubs at Athletic. Really good writing. So check it out. And yeah, he wrote about this topic about how if this continues, the Cubs are going to be set up for a very challenging conversation. And yeah, if it does continue, it's true. This is not a fun conversation to have with anyone. No. Kyle is a very specific type of pitcher that it's not that, you know, maybe getting another chance with another team. I don't know if he does that. I don't, like, given his potential affinity to the Cubs' affinity to him. Yeah, I don't know if this continues how it plays out. And honestly, at the moment, while certain guys are still hurt, Cubs just need innings.
Yeah.
Michael Cerami had tweeted the other day that the starters have given the Cubs 78 innings and the bullpen has pitched 73 innings.
That's, I know, just, that's not good.
That's not the balance. But, you know, one thing I do want to look at in response to that and should have is, what are the other teams' ratios to that so far? Because I feel like we have not seen length from starters like we have in the past. And, you know,
I think there's only been one complete game.
Yeah.
Is that right? And that was like a couple days ago.
Was that for the
Tanner? I think
there's the no hitter as well for
the no hitters. For Bonka. Yeah.
But still, I mean, is that two? So like you're either throwing a no hitter or you're out in the sixth. Yeah, it's just it's a different age. We have the elbow epidemic, and it's a different time for pitchers. So yeah, Kyle Hendricks' vote of confidence. Sean, what's catching your eye about the Cubs in the last week?
I really dived into the team itself. Just full disclosure, I had this team going at 9-9 at this point in the season. I had them at 9-9 because of that West Coast trip in against, you know, the Dodgers and everything. I had them at 9-9. So at 11-7, I was really impressed, because when you take everything that the Cubs have gone through and Craig Counsell has had to deal with, how do we get here? Well, Cubs injuries, Saya, most recent, Jameson, Steele, Wisdom, you know, those are big names that are on the shelf. We've seen the lack of production from Kyle Hendricks, slow start to Bellinger, and then a slow start for Nico, even though he seems to be heating up a little bit. I'm seeing some things from him that I'm like, yes, hit the ball the other way. Yes, absolutely. Hit the ball up the middle. Start taking your pitches and driving to where they need to go.
Hold on real quick. Did you see the location of that pitch? He hit the go ahead RBI.
Oh my gosh. It was up at his eyebrows.
Yeah. This is a video podcast. So I'm going to give a visual here. Here are my eyes. Here's where that ball was. And he not only like leveled it, like got his bat on that plane, he hit it on the line drive. So he didn't even bust it in the ground or pop it up. That's impressive.
Yeah, I actually saw somebody take the picture of him. It was a picture straight on of him, and they put Vladimir Guerrero's head on his. And I wish I would have saw it on Twitter, because I would have retweeted it, because it was beautiful. Because I mean that ball should never have been hit, let alone hit with that authority like that. That was impressive. So there's some positive trends for Nico, but the big thing here is Michael Busch is a stud. He's carried this team
than one way.
Yeah.
That's a double entendre.
Yes, it is. But I mean, he has just been so impressive. He's getting better defensively. That pick that he had the other night, that ball, that's a tough ball to pick out of the dirt. And he's just, I mean, it was five home runs in a row, right? Five home runs in five games.
Yep. No one has ever done six. And he had a few balls in that game that he was close.
Yeah, he went Oppo Taco. I'm wearing an Oppo Taco shirt. It was close to an Oppo Taco. So there was that. Morel had his hot streak. He seems to be cooling off a little bit. I'm starting to see him get into some bad habits, diving out at those sliders. But how we got here is some of these really surprised me. The Cubs are top 10 in home runs. When you look at this team, would you expect this team to be top 10 in home runs?
No, I don't think I would. There's a lot of questions we had in our preview about where the slug was going to come from.
And yeah.
They have produced on a slugging perspective. We've seen guys that needed to step up or to add slug step up. So that's a nice surprise.
Yeah. And speaking of slugging, their top half in OPS, top 10 in on base percentage and top 10 in walks. So they're doing it well offensively. The thing that shocked me the most, though, they are top five in Ks by their pitchers. Which is just shocking to me.
Yeah. That's
like, was there other rainouts we talked about this team not striking out a ton, you know, they don't have a lot of swing and miss, and being in the top five in Ks, that just, you know, blew me away. The couple of things that are probably holding them back and why they're not better than 11-7, the middle of the pack in ERA and middle of the pack in walks. And I think that's contributing to the relief pitchers giving a lot of innings. And then, Kyle Hendricks can be blamed for some of that with his high ERA. Sorry, Jeff.
Sure. No, it's all right.
I think there's a Craig Council effect here. We saw it with the Brewers. They seem to overplay what the roster is. And this team, you know, just every team has adversity, but this team is thriving in it. 11-7 facing, you know, three, you know, your ace, one of your most productive hitters, and, you know, a guy who's going to give you innings and Jameson on the shelf, and you're 11-7. That's amazing. And one thing that we can't dismiss is when a new manager joins the team, it's going to take a while to get to know your players, move through that and stuff. And this seems like there's zero learning curve for Craig Council. Came in here, challenged the front office. And he's done a really good job in general. And I've seen some of these folks on Twitter that are like, I wouldn't have brought Smiley in at the end. I actually love that move.
Yeah,
I know he gave up the homer to Jock, but I like that move. I mean, Hayden came in a very interesting situation where he was woke up at 1 a.m. to say that, hey, you need to get on a plane.
Yeah,
you've exactly. been called up, and you know, his path to pitching in that game was quite interesting. And then he goes out there and just absolutely shoves and could be another weapon in Craig Council's arsenal. I mean, maybe that's the new thing with pitching. You know, we talk about, you know, starting pitching only going 4 to 5 innings. Maybe we're looking at a guy that comes in like Hayden that can eat up 3 innings, like what he did against the Diamondbacks. So I just feel like this team is hitting on all cylinders, even with that adversity. And the other point I wanted to bring up, and this is really a question to you, Jeff, is I know it's early, but are we wrong with how the Cubs how the Cubs front office built this team, believing in the young arms of the Wicks, Assad and Brown? Morel is the guy for third base, got Belly on the cheap. I mean, like, are we a little wrong in thinking, you know, like, should have got Montgomery? Now, granted, that would have helped our pitching out a little bit. I was the person that screamed, I want Matt Chapman for third base, but Morel's looked better there defensively as he's played more there. And we all know that Morel at third is a lot better than Morel at DH because it gives you so many more options at DH. So my question to you, are we wrong? Is it too early to say that we're wrong? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think my immediate reaction is it might be too early. I think that, you know, there's been some tea leaves with Jed Hoyer on the radio recently about they had budget to get one of the Boris guys and they felt Belly was the best fit, which if that's the case, then yeah, that's the guy you go get.
Yeah.
You can be frustrated by that comment given the amount of money the Cubs make. That's not what we're discussing at the moment.
No, we're not going to hit that.
Exactly. We've beat that to death and lots of folks beat that to death. But yeah, I think that there are pros and cons and it is very early. And, you know, yes, there's been some really nice stories with the young arms and that is good news. I think the concern that we had and still was rightfully so, especially now too with injuries that have kind of plagued this team early, which, you know, is another testament to just how good the record is given, you know, how many bullets we've taken from the gun. But, you know, you don't want to go into a season with that many question marks of like, what are they going to be? Mm-hmm. You would like to be a team like the Cubs and go in, this is what our floor is, a really high floor, and these guys raise the ceiling. And I would say the Cubs established a floor in what they were last year and are using the young guys to push a ceiling, which is, and I just think that it is frustrating that the division we're in made not changing the four acceptable. And I think we're kind of still in that spot.
Yeah, and I can see that.
It's been nice to see Ben Brown come up. I have concerns. I like the curveball shape and the whiffs and how he's kind of goes out there and pitches. But the hard hit rate is high. The guy, when he does leave it in the zone, gets hit really, really hard. You know, we saw what happened in his debut. He got rocked a little bit.
Yeah, he did.
You know, as the confidence builds and, you know, more pitches develop, like that, he looks like he could be a guy. He's a rotation guy, a minimum. And as things get healthy and they kind of rearrange some stuff as we figure out, like if he goes to the bullpen and he's deploying that type of arsenal, then that's a really good bullpen weapon. And
yeah, exactly.
We're still having conversations about how many of the bullets that are in Cade Horton's arm this year, how many of those are you going to use in the major leagues? What does he have left to prove in the minors? Is how many bullets do you want to use down there on a developmental perspective, especially how many of those bullets do you really want to use at AA? I think the guy is starting to look, based on his dominance, ready for AAA at minimum. And if he is ready for AAA, you know, on a pitching perspective, what is the value of playing specific teams in AAA when you can get that feedback a little bit sooner on a guy like that with a cup of coffee and then send him to AAA to work on things? I think that has kind of become a little bit of a shifted philosophy. You know, Morel obviously made that jump from AA to the majors, and it had a lot to do with 40-man roster positioning at the time. But yeah, it's, you know, it's very interesting to see. So like, stay tuned. Like, I hope we're wrong. I hope, you know,
Jed's
going to have to answer less questions from this fan base if, you know, some of these things.
Yeah, if he is right. Yeah.
I think we were justified in being like frustrated with going into the season with not much of a different floor and using lottery tickets to look for the ceiling instead of trying to find ceiling, especially when, you know, some of these assets, even guys that aren't on this team, could have been traded for like a Juan Soto or looking for a real front end rotation arm, those types of things. So I think like those things still exist, those problems still exist, and there's still opportunity potentially to address this at the trade line. But, you know, with arm injuries and those things, like those things are also dissipating as well. You know, a Cub target we talked about a lot, Shane Bieber, like he's done. He's on Tommy John. So, like, you know, everybody's going to be circling because of a larger playoff field. Everybody's going to be sniffing around the Marlins with how they've
been. Yeah, sure.
Looking at the White Sox roster to see whatever's not nailed down. If you're the Cubs, you're going to have to pay a premium for a cross-town trade. So, yeah, there's just a lot of, like, these are all like way too soon conversations, but it's nice to feel wrong right now. I'm happy with being wrong.
Yeah, especially when they're on pace to go 99-63. So
is that good?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Big if true.
Yeah. So speaking of the Marlins, you were going to talk about our preview on the Marlins.
Yeah, nothing too exciting here. Just taking a look at the pitching matchup. The four-game series, and it's a seven-game homestand coming up, which is nice for some home cooking. We got Jameson Taillon making his debut tonight, dating the pod. He's facing AJ Puck, who was a really good closer for them, and they stretched him out in the rotation. The results have not been great early on. He has struggled with the length. The velocity is down in the rotation. Not the same type of pitcher. Lefty on the mound. There's a lot of lefties this weekend, which is why Patrick Wisdom is probably here. The dude just destroys lefties.
He does. Then
game two is going to be Imanaga versus Jesus Luzardo, which I'm interested in seeing Luzardo because that has been a name that we've mentioned as a Cubs target. Would like to see the stuff. He has not had the hottest start to the year, but, you know, not everybody does. Saturday and Sunday, Edward Cabrera and Weathers, Ryan Weathers, are pitching for the weekend set. And Saturday, we've got Assad, and Sunday, we have Kyle Hendricks. Edward Cabrera just made his first start coming back off the injured list, and he went 6 innings, 10 Ks for San Francisco. And Weathers has got a sub-3 ERA to start the year. He's been pretty good as well. So kind of looking at the matchup-wise, Cubs are going to probably want to take the first two and steal one of the last two if they're going to win this series because,
yeah,
Edward Cabrera's looked very good. I need to look at his arsenal, see how the Cubs fare against the types of pitches he throws. But the Cubs have seen, you know, one of the highest average velocities this year based on pitching. They've seen a lot of top-end pitching and, you know, fared pretty well. Their offensive numbers have looked pretty good. And, you know, those numbers could potentially get better as they see different types of pitchers. But, yeah, this weekend they've got that Saturday-Sunday matchup. It's a little tougher than I think people expect. And I'm really hoping, you know, the weather in Chicago is going to be not warm, but not cold. So
yeah,
maybe not the most offensively conducive weather, but yeah, hoping to see Sunday, I'll be definitely keeping my eye on Kyle Hendricks' start and hoping that it's the signs of that thing moving.
Just give me under four runs. Just give me under four runs.
If he gets hit really hard by that Marlins lineup that doesn't have a ton of thump, maybe we start having a different conversation.
Agreed.
You know, you have Jazz Chisholm in there as kind of, he was the cover of MLB The Show last year. He's an exciting player, fast, has had some issues staying healthy. But yeah, the rest of that lineup, besides Luis Arias, isn't exactly, you know, making me shake in my boots. So
no,
there's some opportunity here, especially with like Imanaga seeing a team that doesn't hit well and them seeing him for the first time. That might be a sexy pick for some betting on Saturday. But yeah, hoping the Cubs can try to take 3 out of 4. I'll take the split, though, given the back end matchups.
Yeah, I think you have a great opportunity to, you know, split there, but I would love a sweep. I'd also love a sweep against the Astros, who, you know, banging trash cans. I'll never forgive them for that. He's got his mic on.
that means breaking ball. Don't take my sweatshirt off.
Don't take my sweatshirt off. No buzzer. My pearls.
I got a new tattoo I'm embarrassed about.
Yeah.
It's of Michael Bush.
Oh, that got me. Okay, so we got our former NL Central rivals, the Houston Astros. We got Wicks against Hunter Brown, Jameson against JP France, and then Shota against what's his first name? Blanco. His first name. His last name's Blanco.
Ryanel Blanco.
Ryanel. Yeah. So I
not a names pod, just a math pod.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't do well with names. So there's that. That's my one fault. The only one.
Sean, say my last name.
No.
Rogalskis. Oh, Rogalskis.
Yeah. There we go. I think they take 2 of 3. One of the things that makes me a little worried now that I said, man, the Astros are awful. They're probably going to come in and just wreak havoc against the Cubs because I believe in that reversed optimism. You know, I would feel really good if they took 2 of 3. Blanco is going to be a tough win. And I'm looking forward to that Shota matchup and seeing him pitch, but taking 2 of 3, I think is definitely doable. That's what I have down, and making it a pretty good series
for the Cubs against the Astros.
Yeah, and that means we've got an off day on Monday this week because they play Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And yeah, it'll be nice to for them to be home and have an off day. It's been a tough stretch for them and for them to get rest. It's been a tough stretch for us dads watching these games and trying to stay awake. But it has not been as tough stretch on this episode as we come to a close. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Once again, my name is Candid Cubs, a.k.a. Jeff Rogowskis. You can find me all over the internet and find links in our bio. Sean, how about you?
My name is Sean Hotstove Cubbies Chapin. You can find me on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, Instagram and Facebook. And coming soon, actually, it's already here, the new Bricks Behind the Ivy logo.
That's BBTI.
Yeah. So excited for that. If you guys want to give us some feedback on what you think of things and what you would like to hear, give that to us too. DM us, tweet us, send us a carrier pigeon, however you want to communicate with us.
Yeah, so check us out, find us on all the socials. We'll have some new links as we've kind of put everything together and rebranded a little bit. Tell us how you feel about the brand. This has been another episode of Bricks Behind the Ivy, a Cubs podcast for Cub fans by Cub fans. See you guys next week.
Bye.
Well, that's going to do it from here, from Bricks Behind the Ivy. This is Harry Carey. We know you've enjoyed the broadcast and the outcome. Be sure to share, like, and subscribe to this wonderful broadcast that they've done and the podcast going forward. Be sure to also check us out on YouTube and Instagram and, hell, whatever else is out there on the airwave. And we want to thank Jeff and Sean for putting us all together and keeping us all Cub fan entertained with their knowledge. You know, I also love to always say that Jeff's last name spelled backward is sick as cigar. And Sean's is Nipak. My, oh my, never, it never gets old. Well, that's going to do it from here. So from all of us here at Bricks Behind the Ivy, this is Harry Carey saying, go Cub, holy cow, and so long, everybody.